from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Janet Jackson's split-second breast bearing on Super Bowl night sent FCC Chairman Michael Powell on the warpath. He launched an investigation. He called for congressional hearings into broadcast indecency. Now, in the midst of a big election year, Congress is going after raunchy radio and racy TV. The House is scheduled to vote tomorrow on new legislation that would raise fines for indecency offenses from $27,500 per violation to a maximum of $500,000 per no-no. President Bush has indicated he supports the bill. The Senate has its own pending legislation on a broad crackdown. The nation's largest radio company, Clear Channel, has responded to the new heat and a $755,000 FCC fine by suspending shock jock Howard Stern in six markets and dumping Tampa's Bubba the Love Sponge. ABC and CBS are telling their producers to cut sexually explicit material. Even the Academy Awards were broadcast with a five-second delay, so obscenities or suggestive behavior could be bleeped out. And so America is back on the ramparts of the culture war. Some yearn for decency, some yearn for free speech, and many wish we could have a little more of both. Tonight on Point, turning the screws on shock jock radio and raw TV. We begin in Washington, where technology policy writer for The Washington Post, Jonathan Krim, has been following the FCC story. He joins me now from Washington. Jonathan, can you describe what the House and Senate are up to this week on the broadcasting front?
Sure. The House is going to vote tomorrow on a fairly simple bill. It raises, as you said, the fines for violations of indecency rules by as much as $500,000 from $27,500.
Big enough that anybody would feel that bite.
Yeah, I think so, particularly when you have a lot of these shows that are syndicated, and so they run in many different markets, and each time that happens is another fine if it's indecent. So that will add up to real money for broadcasters. The Senate is doing much the same thing, but has added a couple of other things that some senators are hoping will sneak through. One is a often-tried attempt to also crack down on violence. Senator Hollings of South Carolina has been championing this for several years, hasn't gotten anywhere with it, but is hoping that this might be the vehicle that he can get that through.
Jonathan, would it also then be linked to fines in the Senate bill?
It would be linked to fines ultimately. All it really does for the time being is direct the FCC to determine whether electronic means of blocking violent programming, the so-called V-chip, are working.
Okay.
The fact is that nobody uses it, and that's one of the big problems. And if the FCC determines that these things aren't working, then they're going to develop a regime for when violent programming can and cannot be on the air, and obviously the next step would be fines if people violate that.
And is it the Senate that's also looking at curbing the growth of big media companies related to all this?
They are, and as you recall, there was a big fight about this late last year. The FCC pushed relaxing the media ownership rules, and the folks that were kind of on the losing end of that argument are trying again by piggybacking it onto this bill. And what they're saying is that there's a relationship between growing media concentration and indecency. The argument, again, being if there are a few companies that run most of the radio stations in particular and most of the TV stations, and they're syndicating the same programs over and over and over again, we're going to get a lot more of this kind of programming. So that's their argument. I have a feeling that that will not survive either the full Senate or a negotiation with the House. And even if it did, I think then there might be question about whether President Bush would sign the bill.
Jonathan Krim, what is driving the congressional heat right now on indecency? Is this really all about Janet Jackson's bared bosom?
Well, it certainly that was certainly the catalyst. You have an election year. You have particularly a conservative voting bloc that is very vocal and very powerful in many areas in Congress. And even the Democrats at this point are looking to show that they are as strong on this issue as the Republicans. And in fact, some of the tougher provisions that were discussed yesterday at the Senate Commerce Committee were being talked about by the Democrats as much as anyone. I think the real tension is going to be that you know, at the end of the day, sex sells, and that's the big elephant in the room, which no one really wants to talk about, is that a lot of this programming is there because it sells, it has listenership, and it sells advertising. These companies are going to really have to make some hard choices.
Yeah, we can see that. Jonathan, how about the odds of passage here? Do you expect, do observers expect that we'll see a bill with a much tougher regime on broadcast indecency in this session of Congress?
Yes, we will definitely see that with certainly the tougher fines. And the fines are going to extend quite possibly to artists as well. And that's a new wrinkle.
What's the distinction you're drawing there? Art between artists and what? Who?
Well,
who's been
right,
covered?
Right now, it is the broadcaster that has the license with the FCC. And so the FCC enforcement power extends to those which have the license. What these bills would do is extend the FCC's power to fine to artists who knowingly break indecency rules as well. And the artist community is now really starting to wake up and start to try to fight that.
Do you mean that Bono or Prince could face a $500,000 fine for an obscenity on the air?
Potentially, yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Federal Communications Commission Chairman Michael Powell has been very tough on this whole line, but today he warned that if the legislation that's drafted goes too far, it could run into free speech problems and undermine this whole effort. What's he speaking to there?
Well, he's been really interesting on this. A couple of years ago, he talked about how there didn't need to be a nanny in the federal government worrying about these things. He then kind of flipped around and got very concerned after Janet Jackson. I think he's trying to walk a middle line here. He wants there to be a crackdown. He wants more enforcement authority. But I think he does not want what some people would view as a witch hunt and censorship.
I've got to ask you about cable as well. I heard some talk that even cable television might come under new scrutiny in this legislation. Is that right?
Well, it was discussed yesterday, and it failed on a very close vote. I believe it was 12 to 11, an amendment that would have extended these rules to cable. Now, the problem with that is that there are some court decisions that make it very clear that when programming is for pay, it is able to operate under a different set of rules than what is being beamed over the public airwaves. And so even had that passed, there would have been a huge legal battle over that. And no one expects that to happen right now. The cable lobby is very, very powerful in this town.
So Tony Soprano's not going to be saying shucks and dadgummit anytime soon. But what about broadcast media? Project out, I don't know, a year from now, Jonathan, do you expect we're really going to say goodbye to this very racy, very deep vein of radio that's come to define so much of talk radio and morning radio and even big areas of television? Is that going away?
I don't think so. I think what's going to happen, though, is that there are going to be certain bright lines that will not be able to be crossed. And then the question is going to be, a guy like Howard Stern, will he still want to do what he does? He can still be very racy and some would argue very raunchy without crossing the line into profanity and obscenity. And that's going to be a case-by-case, interesting and difficult situation for all broadcasters. And so a guy like Stern, who really doesn't want to operate under any of those constraints and has been trying to whip up a real backlash against the administration on this, is, you know, he's been saying, I can't operate like this. I'm going to have to quit. Now, whether he's just kind of ringing an alarm bell or not, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, that'll be a very public decision, whatever it is. Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Krim is a reporter for The Washington Post. He spoke with me from Washington. We are talking tonight about the backlash against indecency on the airwaves. Is it time for a crackdown, a cleanup, a get-out-of-town notice to Howard Stern and Bubba the Love Sponge? Or are the thought police going after free speech in America? Do you want the government regulating the words you hear, the images you see? What is the solution here? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from San Francisco is James Steyer, chairman of Common Sense Media. It's a nonprofit organization that monitors U.S. media policy and rates and reviews media from a children's perspective. He's also a professor at Stanford University, where he teaches classes on civil rights and civil liberties. He is author of The Other Parent, The Inside Story of the Media's Effect on Our Children. Good evening and welcome, James Steyer.
Hi, Tom.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Joining me also tonight from New York is Paul Levinson, chairman of the Communication and Media Studies Department at Fordham University. His essay, "The FCC and Halftime Censorship Can Be a Dangerous Weapon," appeared recently in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He is author of The Soft Edge, A Natural History and Future of the Information Revolution. Good evening and welcome, Paul Levinson.
Good to be here, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. James Steyer, first to you, what's the problem? Why action? Why now? Is it really all about one breast exposed for half a second?
No, I don't think it really is at all, Tom. I think that, to be honest, that this has been a slow, slippery slope. And I think that what you're seeing here is definitely some election year hype and some Johnny-come-latelys to the party, including Michael Powell in many cases. But I think what you see is the fact that a great majority of the American public, parents, grandparents, teachers, kids themselves, have been pretty concerned with the overall content of broadcast and cable and various media and entertainment platforms over the past 5 or 10 years. And we've seen no discussion of this, and quite honestly, zero leadership out of either the FCC or Congress or the media companies themselves, these huge conglomerates. And I think that the Super Bowl halftime show was a tipping point, but there is a deep and I think pretty bipartisan public concern around this. The issue is, can we find a common sense, common ground approach as opposed to a censorship approach or an extreme approach on either side? That's what we're really looking for, and I do actually think that can come out.
But Jim Steyer, Americans listen to Howard Stern and other shock jocks by the many millions. So who's the government to say, tut, tut, stop it?
Well, first of all, it isn't just the government, Tom, and I think it's really important to frame the discussion in the context of who the players are in this discussion. First of all, there's the media industry itself. There are the huge vertically integrated media companies which own and make millions of dollars in profits every year.
Yeah, but you know very well that they're now acting under pressure from the government. They sat with Howard Stern quite comfortably for many years.
Agreed, but also they're acting to some extent also from pressure from the public. But the second thing I'd say there, Tom, is that the public owns the airwaves, and it's very clear how the airwaves are supposed to be done. The licenses are given free to broadcasters, including those of us that are out there listening tonight. And therefore, there is a public interest responsibility that all broadcasters, and I would suggest virtually all media companies, have. And we're trying for I think you need to find some sanity and balance here, not censorship.
Paul Levinson, you know there's a lot of discomfort out there. On the other hand, people don't want to see free speech go away. Where's the right balance here?
Well, there shouldn't be a balance, and I think there's a profound misunderstanding in what the professor from Stanford just said. It doesn't matter if a majority of Americans don't like something that's on the airwaves. In fact, it doesn't matter if 99.99% of Americans don't like that. The whole point of our democracy and the First Amendment is that speech that people don't like, communication that people do find objectionable, is protected. That's what differentiates our democracy from, say, ancient Athens, where a majority of people decided they didn't like Socrates and what he was saying, and so they sentenced him to death.
The FCC was born with a mandate to prohibit obscene, indecent, or profane language. It's sitting right there in the statute.
Well, that was unconstitutional back then, and it's unconstitutional now. As I'm sure you know, the First Amendment is very explicit. It says Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech or of the press. So what in the phrase no law is unclear? No law means no law. And actually, for the first 120 or so years of American history, with the regrettable exception of the Alien and Sedition Act of 1798, which expired after 3 years, but with the exception of that, Americans and Congresses and presidents respected the First Amendment. Even Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War was very restrained when Northern newspapers criticized his war policies.
Paul Levinson, Jim Steyer, stand by. We've got to take a short break. We hear you loud and clear, and yet there's this shower of profanity coming down on the country. People are uneasy about it. What should happen here? We're talking tonight about the backlash against indecency on the airwaves. Congress, the FCC, and big media companies all turning the screws on shock jocks and racy broadcast programming. Is it time for a crackdown, a cleanup, or is this the thought police going after free speech in America? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the backlash against indecency on the airwaves, backlash in Congress, at the FCC, in big media companies, all turning the screws on shock jocks and racy broadcast programming. You can join our conversation tonight. Do you want government regulating the words you hear, the images you see? Is this the response you wanted when you balked at Super Bowl raunchiness at Janet Jackson's bust out? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Clear Channel, the giant radio company, suspended Howard Stern in six markets, his show, even in advance of whatever Congress is going to do. Howard Stern has been a name right at the center of all this. There's an awful lot of what he airs that we can't even put on the air, but here's a taste if you're not a listener.
Well, how old are you when you started having sex?
Yes, I hate it.
How many guys have you been with? Just that one guy.
Yeah. Just one guy?
So, you know, you...
And how old were you when you started it with him?
I think I was about to turn 17.
Right. Oh, so you've only been having sex for like a year.
A little over a year.
Wow.
No, and you left
Wait,
him
no,
and...
2 years about, because I'm going to turn 19 in May.
Boy, that's fresh meat.
And that's the nice stuff. Everybody's, or many people have heard it. People have all kinds of responses to it. It's on the air. Should it be? Is it protected? Is that fundamental to the First Amendment in America? Or is there some kind of new balance required here? You can join us tonight, 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined tonight from San Francisco by Jim Steyer, chairman of Common Sense Media, and from New York by Paul Levinson, chairman at the Communication and Media Studies Department at Fordham University. Paul Evanson, I had to cut in on you there, but you were pointing to the fundamental precepts behind the First Amendment that you don't censor, you put it out there, and you let the public sort it out. Is there any point at which the public ownership of airwaves ought to impinge on that wide-open range?
No, because censorship historically has been shown to be like cancer. Just as a cancer cell introduced into a healthy body can result in the death of that body, once you begin opening the door to censorship, and, you know, the report that you had about what was going on in Washington today and yesterday, you know, demonstrates that. It starts off censorship with a seemingly reasonable, you know, exception. Okay, all speech and communication is allowed, but just not this utterly obscene thing. And then it begins moving into other areas. You know, in Nazi Germany, Hitler's minister of propaganda and popular enlightenment, Joseph Goebbels, one of the first things he did when the Nazis took over is he cracked down on unpopular books in Germany. And in fact, he burned those books. And as we know, tragically, 10 years later, 6 million people were burned. So there is a direct connection between stifling free expression and then eventually doing much more horrendous things.
So, Paul Levinson,
I want to make a point.
Yes, please.
Just one quick thing about Howard Stern. The piece that you played and, you know, this notion of obscenity, Howard Stern is not obscene. We may not like him. He may be indelicate. I have never heard him utter an obscene word. And, in fact, my understanding is he takes great care not to be obscene. So this, again, is part of the problem. You know, you have these words bandied around, obscene, indecent. No one even knows, you know, what the objective definition of those words are because there is no objective
definition.
You know,
I've got to say I've listened to a fair bit of Howard Stern. I even have a soft spot for Howard Stern, and he comes out with some very honest statements, but an awful lot that's really puerile. And a fair bit that I'm no lawyer, but that sounds pretty close to obscenity to me. Paul Levinson, I just want to ask on this point, if a society then, you heard Jonathan Krim with the Washington Post saying earlier, what we all know, sex sells. If the society just feels marinated in a kind of raunchy sexuality to the point that it seems corrupting of public morality at some level, is that just Babbittism? Is there no place whatsoever for a line to be drawn? How do you suggest the public responds if it's feeling really degraded by some of the conversation out there?
Well, very simple. The remedy is don't listen to it, don't watch it, you know, don't buy it. And, you know, people like Bill O'Reilly, who constantly rail out against, you know, he can't stand this rapper and Ludacris is horrible.
Yep.
If people agree with O'Reilly, they don't have to listen to it. They don't have to buy those records. To bring the government in, it literally at the point of a gun, because if you don't follow what the government does, they can send police who can arrest you. The thought Gestapo would probably be a better name than the thought police for that. That, again, is utterly destructive of any democracy.
Jim Starr, how about it? Why are you coming in with the big censorship stick here? Why not let people just change the channel or turn the radio or the TV off?
Tom, I'm not coming in with a big censorship stick. This is...
Well, wait a minute. You know, I have $500,000 fine for particular words. That sounds like a kind of censorship.
Am I proposing that, Tom? I'm sorry. I'd forgotten I didn't realize I'd passed that legislation.
I thought you were supporting this legislation. Are you not?
No. What I'm saying is that there's a reasonable and balanced discussion it needs to have, needs to occur here. You know, you can have extreme absolutist ideological positions on either side of this one, from a far-right Christian fundamentalist one or from an absolutist First Amendment perspective. But neither has any grounding in the way that our society has dealt with these issues over the past 75 years, nor do they have any grounding in case law and everything that's out there. And what's really called for here is clearly not censorship, but sanity and reasonableness. By the way, does the public have the ownership of the airwaves? Sure. Are there ways in which that can be enforced, and are there lines that can be drawn? Sure there are. And there's a role for government in that. There's very much a role for media industry responsibility, and there's a role for individual choice and parental involvement, et cetera. But extremist positions, and even in some ways, Tom, the way you're painting it, between thought police versus the opposite, is not really the reality for 90% of the public. It's somewhere in the middle who want to protect free speech, who want to protect, for example, the rights of artists to say what they want. The idea of fining artists seems abhorrent to me, but who want balance and a reasonable position that's about sanity, not censorship. Is there a role for the FCC in that? Sure. That's exactly what its constitutional mandate is for.
Well, you know, it sounds nice when you put it that way, and I'm very sympathetic to that. Who wouldn't like to have, you know, free speech and at the same time a kind of basically wholesome media out there? But those things, you know, are open to great interpretation. You wrap some gauzy language about it, saying it's not censorship, but yet these are lines being drawn and very large fines, even after three offenses, potentially closing down a media company. That sounds like censorship to me.
Well, Tom, you're completely right. You know, a $500,000 fine multiplied by any number is enough to put companies out of business. So let's not make any mistake about it. The power to levy fines like that is the power to utterly destroy and shut up points of view that we don't like. But I'd like to ask Jim, you know, he seems to want to strike a reasonable balance. So I assume then, Jim, you would think it was okay if you have a person and there's a choice between killing the person or not doing anything at all to the person. You would want to strike a reasonable balance and what? Chop off the person's arm? Because that's what's going on here.
How
can you have a reasonable balance when you're censoring and preventing certain people from communicating?
Paul, I guess you view it that way, and I respect your right to view it that way, and in fact, your free speech right to express it and anyone else's viewpoint however you would like. But I would say no. I think that this is really a case. Media's impact on society and on kids and families is enormous, and there is a balancing that has to happen in this process, and one which has to include all the different sides and players that are involved. And as I said, an extreme position on either side of the coin, including a pure censorship approach, is not going to work. But there is a middle ground, I'm sure, one that can protect free speech rights of both artists and also of companies, but also that balances public interest. And the legal term, as folks who know the law in this area, is reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. And it is a balancing act. There are no bright line words per se. But this is a healthy debate for us to have as a society. This is an enormous public health issue for millions of kids across this country. This is an enormous education issue. I am a progressive person who believes deeply in the First Amendment and teaches civil rights and civil liberties law at Stanford from a progressive perspective. And I'm also the parent of four kids. There is a balance to be found here. There are ways to keep Howard Stern on the air, but yet make it a more common sense, kid-friendly airwaves.
And I'm not sure Howard Stern agrees with that, but on the other hand,
everybody can feel that.
Well, he's an American. He's got rights to free speech. On the other hand, everybody can feel exactly the tension you're describing, Jim Steyer, and the public health aspect of this. Jim, Paul, a lot of callers want to join us. Let me turn to them. Linda's calling from Georgetown, Kentucky. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm very glad that I get some input.
It's good to have you, Linda. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I'm a citizen of the United States. I'm a retired teacher, and I feel like the First Amendment is not unconstitutional, as that person said. And one of the remedies that they said is don't listen. Okay, I don't listen to Howard Stern and never have and never will. But I do like to watch TV, and I am sick and tired of the F-U word on every sitcom, et cetera, et cetera.
So, Linda, does that mean you're watching cable TV?
Yes.
And cable TV is protected from this kind of FCC oversight because...
It should be.
Well, it is. I mean, there is no FCC intervention there.
I can tolerate a certain amount.
Right.
But that F word just absolutely... is intolerable to me.
I understand that, Linda, but
isn't that the Disney Channel
or the Family Channel or any channel on broadcast TV and never hear that word?
A lot of the Disney programs that are on, because I'm 62 years old and I can handle a little more than Disney and the Family.
But
channel.
Linda, let me ask you: isn't that between you and the cable company? If you don't like that, you can just stop getting cable.
No, I think we need the FCC to make decisions. Because I want to ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
How much free speech, and I'm understanding them to say that it should just be totally free speech, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
What about examples like this? If the police officer arrests me for whatever,
stops me.
Or maybe not even arrests me. That has me pull over for whatever reason. Well, I do not have free speech to curse him out and ask him what the blankety blank he's doing, stopping me because I have free speech.
But there you're in the middle of an arrest.
But when
you're sitting at home watching cable television, you can turn it off or you can stop getting it. Yet what we hear,
right.
If I turned it off,
I couldn't watch anything, which I rarely do anyway. For that very reason.
Right. Ain't that America,
well,
2004. Linda, we've got the perspective. Thanks very much for calling it in. Paul Levinson, Linda's saying, look, I paid for this, and I'm not getting what I want, and I wish somebody would intervene.
Well, here you have the problem. Linda doesn't like certain kinds of television, so she wants a world where the FCC and the government prevents anyone in the United States from watching that. So Linda's desires become legislation for everyone else. What the First Amendment is saying is if Linda doesn't like it, Linda doesn't have to watch it. And furthermore, there is plenty of programming and material that might be to Linda's liking. That's really what it's all about, giving people, human beings, the option to communicate as they see fit.
Jim Steyer, for a moment this week, there was in the House or Senate, I don't recall now, an effort to take these restrictions to cable itself. Do you see any traction there? Is that likely to happen, or is that protected and off limits for the FCC?
It's actually not protected. I think that there's a good chance that that will happen, in fact, because for the average person, remember, by the way, there are 40 million kids in the United States who are exposed to media every day, and not every parent can spend, and most of them spend approximately 7 hours a day consuming media, and not every parent can spend all that time with their kids all the time acting as a filter. So there are kids involved, and as anyone who's ever read any case law or constitutional analysis in this field knows, there are balances and protections for children that are critical to this discussion. So I think that's very important to think about all of this and the balancing process that necessarily happens in that case. And let's look at the cable issue for a second. I actually believe that with the proliferation of cable, that cable and broadcast should be treated the same. However they're traded, to the average viewer, to the average child in the audience, the channel button is the channel button, whether it's 7, 13, or 21.
But the relationship is really not the same because cable is something I buy. It's not broadcast.
it's actually a scarcity issue, and that's a fairly outdated piece of legislation. And it's a question of whether or not the courts would uphold treating broadcast and the cable the same. But there's a second piece that relates to cable that's important as well, which is what's called cable a la carte, which would suggest that, say, our caller who just spoke yep. to us does only wants to get the Discovery Channel. This is on cable. The Discovery Channel, the Learning Channel, and the Home and Garden Channel, yep. along with the yep. three yep. broadcast networks. They could then choose that a la carte and say, I don't want anything
You're
else.
You're saying
that
give her that option. Jim Starr,
unbundling it. Yep.
Hold it there for a moment. I want to welcome into our conversation Tom Taylor from Trenton, New Jersey. He's editor of Inside Radio, a daily industry newsletter. Tom Taylor, thanks for joining us.
A real pleasure. Great to join your discussion.
Tom, how is this whole conversation in Washington rippling through the radio industry? Clear Channel has taken some very high-profile steps, but is it having a wider impact or not?
It really is, and it's really got radio companies alarmed and scared because they're saying, tell us what the rules are. You've been talking about the difficulty of finding bright lines, and it's probably impossible to find bright lines, but people are now getting fined for things that happened 3 years ago.
Has anybody other than Howard Stern and Bubba the Love Sponge in Tampa been actually taken off the air?
No. No, and the Stern action affected only six Clear Channel right. affiliates mm-hmm. in Miami and San Diego and some other places. Bubba the Love Sponge was on at four stations. He's now off the air.
So everybody else is still up and running. Is it changing the way programming departments and station managers are overseeing their output?
Yeah, absolutely. For one thing, Clear Channel just announced yesterday that it's spending over $500,000 to buy delay equipment.
That's the five-second delay so they
That's
can...
five up to 20 seconds, and in fact, they've decided that may not be enough. They're actually working in-house in their engineering department to develop a delay system that would give them up to 5 minutes.
Tom Taylor, where do you think all this is headed? Do you expect a year from now, 2 years from now, to see a cleaned-up American radio spectrum where the kind of trash talk is gone or dramatically diminished?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens after the November elections, won't it?
You think it'll all calm down then and blow away?
It's hard to tell. It's impossible to tell. Right now there's this wave, and I would argue that it began last October 3rd when the FCC didn't do something.
And what was that?
It didn't decide that what Bono said on live television in the Golden Globes back in February 2003. Bono got a little excited and said something when he got an award, and we've probably all seen that by now. And the FCC staff, not the commission itself, but the staff, decided that what he said wasn't indecent on two grounds. A, it was a sort of spontaneous utterance, and second, that in that context, the word that he used was not indecent. And the way they got reported in some media was the FCC says the F word is okay. And that actually wasn't what the commission was saying. But I think that perception got out there, and that really energized a lot of people. Since then, we've had a number of events, and finally we wind up at the Super Bowl.
Tom, do you imagine a future for radio like television, where people just migrate away from broadcast radio to satellite radio, which would have cable-like protections?
Well, Howard Stern said this morning that he's already talked with both XM and Sirius. Of course, he's not available yet. He's not a free agent yet. He's very much under contract to Infinity.
Right.
Some content almost certainly will migrate there.
And that might create a new reservation for all that. But on the other hand, this industry really depends on guys like Howard Stern. They bring in big audiences.
Howard, and I don't think Howard's going away tomorrow. I don't think Howard thinks Howard's going away tomorrow. He certainly brings a very loyal collection of listeners whom he's kept happy for, in some cases, for over 20 years.
Tom Taylor, we've got to take a break, but thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Pleasure.
Tom Taylor, editor of Inside Radio. Jim Steyer in San Francisco. Paul Levinson in New York. Please stand by. We're talking tonight about the backlash against indecency on the airwaves. Is this the high road toward enlightenment and decency, or the low road toward censorship and pandering for votes? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the backlash against indecency on the airwaves, Congress, the FCC, and big media companies all turning the screws on shock jocks and racy broadcast programming. What do you think? Are you a Howard Stern fan? Is his voice a voice of moral collapse or of irreverent challenge, of honesty and candor, even when it's gross? Why don't you just turn it off if you don't like it instead of the government cracking down? Is it possible to be both sick of trash talk and opposed to government intervention. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Jim Steyer, chairman of Common Sense Media. He joins us from San Francisco. And from New York, Paul Levinson, chairman of the Communication and Media Studies Department at Fordham University. Let's hear just a bit of Howard Stern railing against the new FCC pressure on his employer, Clear Channel.
If the government, the FCC, had to take Infinity Broadcasting to court over the things I was fined for, the court would have said these are not indecent things. This is not indecent. We would have won. And all of this nonsense would be over. But they pressured this company, the government. They buried paperwork. They practiced a form of racketeering that has never before been seen in this country.
Yeah, that's literally the way the mob would have handled it.
That's how the mob
handles
it.
We're being manhandled by a branch of the government.
We said to them, let's go to court and find out if this stuff's indecent. We're perfectly willing to do that.
No. We're going to bury your paperwork.
You can go to court if you want, but you'll not do any business
right
until then.
It's unfriggin' believable.
Shock, shock, Howard Stern complaining he's being manhandled by the government. I should say he's an Infinity Broadcasting employee. Clear Channel carried Stern. Now they don't. I want to turn to Los Angeles right now. We're joined there by Sandra Singh Lo. She's a writer, performer, and musician. She was a regular commentator for Los Angeles NPR affiliate KCRW until she was fired March 1st for uttering an obscenity on air. Good evening and welcome, Sandra Singh Lo.
Well, thank you for having me. And, of course, that obscenity was never meant to be broadcast on air. All my pieces are pre-taped. Instead of a five-second delay, we actually have a four-day delay and sometimes a two-week delay. So they're all pre-taped, pre-edited by the station, and the engineer forgot to bleep it out. It was a concert review of Bette Midler, you know, beloved pop icon.
Right.
Goes a little bit blue in some of her shows, so it was sort of an homage to one of her vaudevillian rhythms that I had a line that rolled out. Word was supposed to be bleeped when on air, and actually the first time I was in a time slot actually fairly obscure, so no calls even came in the first time, and it unfortunately horribly aired a second time. So although it was, you know, it was always intended to be bleeped, and the engineer completely apologized, he continues with the station, and I was immediately fired.
So you pre-taped it. This was the F word in response to a Bette Midler concert that went out on the airwaves. You'd hoped or believed it would be bleeped out, but you're gone, Sandra Singh Lo. Why? Why?
To my horror, I was gone. I think from my station manager's point of view, and I don't want to go too much inside baseball here when we have such vaster topics to discuss,
yep,
but she deemed it was intentional, like the Janet Jackson performance piece. It's hard to put your breast through the radio, if I may say that, especially when it's pre-taped. That was her intention, that somehow I intended it to be that way, even though it was KCRW's engineer. So she just fired me, and the station called it a preemptive distancing just in case the FCC were ever to call.
So you're feeling the heat, even though you say you didn't intend this to go on the air. How do you interpret all this, Sandra Singh Lo? Can you still do what you do comfortably in this new climate, or is it just inhospitable to artists, a performer like yourself?
I think it would be fearful to do, because I think those of us who do commentaries on the radio, and I'm also a theater, I do solo performance last year at the Kennedy Center, which is not known for its raunch, or Seattle Repertory Theater. So my career, and I had just done a Christmas show at the Geffen Theater based on the Nutcracker, so my work is, and at the time, ironically, I was in the middle of a five-part series on knitting, maybe just obscene because 5 weeks is too long to do on knitting. So I'm known for kind of a family, for family work that I do, but I think when you go into the studio, my work is very rhythmic. It's based on cadences of language. That's why we go on the radio as opposed to merely appearing in print.
But you're sitting in the penalty box with Bubba the Love Sponge.
Yes, and Howard Stern himself was my most vocal defender last week on his show. It was unbelievable that he talked, some nice lady going on about her knitting. I mean, Howard Stern, I expect Larry Flint to call next. That's completely surreal, and my editorials are being run next to Rush Limbaugh's. It's a time of such crazy, strange bedfellows, and I'm on public radio. It's just a surrealistic time.
Well, it is a new time. Sandra Singh Lo, thanks for joining us tonight. Sandra Singh Lo was canned March 1st by NPR affiliate KCRW. The F word did not fly. Listeners, do you welcome a chilling effect on raunch radio, or do you fear it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Christina is calling from Boston. Hi, Christina. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
I fear it terribly. I haven't heard anything about parents censoring what their kids watch or what their kids listen to. Whatever happened to that?
Well, a lot of parents are off at work, and the kids are home, and you can't be there all the time, and the media is everywhere. Does that make any difference to you, Christina, or are you saying this should all be decided at home, not in Washington?
Absolutely. I mean, growing up, my parents both worked full-time, yet they made damn sure that I didn't watch things that they didn't deem me appropriate to watch. And, you know, I don't think that's any different from parents working nowadays.
Christina, do you have children yourself?
No, I don't.
I mean, if they're at home, do you think you're going to be able to, with or without the V-chip or on the radio, to keep them away from things that you might think were inappropriate?
If I instill in them the morals that I would like to teach my children, the way my parents instilled in me, then I would trust my children to watch things that were somewhat appropriate for them. You can't, you turn on Comedy Central at night when kids are watching TV. Kids aren't listening to Howard Stern in the morning. Kids are at school.
Yeah, we got it, Christina.
You turn on Comedy Central at night, and there's a lot more obscene, vulgar things going on TV than there are on the radio.
So you're saying parents take a little responsibility here. We've got it, Christina. Thanks very much for your call. Jim Steyer, Paul Levinson made this point in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He says, our democracy was founded on John Milton's idea that truth and falsity, decency and indecency should battle it out in public view, where the true and the good can show their mettle and win. Are you giving up on that notion?
No, how poetic. I'd like to go back to what Christina said, which is about parents, and I agree with her, which is, in fact, that parents are the first line of defense. And, in fact, I actually think that they have to be much more engaged in their kids' media consumption. As I mentioned earlier, the average kid in the United States today who's 8 and older spends 7 hours a day consuming various forms of media, whether it's television, radio, the Internet, whatever. So parents, Christina's absolutely right, although she's clearly not a parent. That they have to be the first line of defense. Actually, what Common Sense Media, the organization that I run, does is we publish a consumer reports guide-like product, which anybody can use so that they can make choices for themselves and their families.
But are you dismissing the political philosophy behind our free speech in the Constitution?
I'm not.
You're saying poetic? It's just a poetic idea? I mean, isn't it a fundamental idea?
It is, but no part of the Constitution is absolutist, and there's never been any interpretation thereof that stood water that is a completely absolutist approach. No, what I'm saying is, and I mean this from a parenting standpoint as well as from a political standpoint, that absolutist ideological positions aren't going to really win out in the long run. What is required is a degree of balancing and sanity for the various disparate viewpoints that are out there. This is not about punishing political speech or keeping off. And by the way, what happened to Sandra Singh Lo is ridiculous. And it was a terrible decision by the program manager or whoever it was at KCRW.
Yes,
who should
be ashamed of herself. It's a logical consequence, Jim, of the position that you are advocating.
I don't agree with you at all.
And to say that the First Amendment is absolutist, well, then you have a quarrel, I guess, with Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, and over 120 years of American history. And incidentally, when was the First Amendment repealed? It's still there on the books. That very First Amendment that was adopted back in 1789, 1790, that's still there. That's
Congress
still
shall
part
make
of
no
the
law
Supreme
abridging
law
of freedom
the land
of speech.
Today. So that's right. So the fact is, the
so
First
all
Amendment,
the laws that have been made, all the laws
but,
that have been
no,
made
no, no,
but, have,
but,
been,
you
have
know,
been rejected.
You,
they're
you
all
seem
wrong
to
and
think,
all unconstitutional.
You seem to think that all laws are equal, and they're not. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. An amendment to the Constitution is part of the supreme law of the land. That means that that law takes precedence over anything else.
True.
And
then there's 100 years
our society has operated.
There's 100 years of case law that would disagree with you.
Guys, stand by. I want to welcome some more callers in here. Yeah. Tim's calling from Boston. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. I just had a kind of a hypothetical to ask Paul.
Yeah.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, loud and clear.
In terms of, like, where do you draw the line? Do you think cigarette companies should be allowed to advertise on television in the name of free speech?
I think, in general, that the government, when it comes to advertisers making false claims about products, which can injure the health of people. And the original cigarette ads, by either implication or in some cases in the 1950s, the ads were saying that cigarettes were good for you. They were consistent with having a vigorous life. In that situation, that's not really a freedom of speech issue. It's more a question of advertising and what people can say in their ads.
But Paul, let me ask you about that then, because Jim Starr puts it in public health terms. He says there's a health issue here in everything that's going on. In your position, are you then suggesting, let's say, full-on sex on NBC or ABC fine because First Amendment's there?
Well, let me just finish this point. If someone is selling a poison and lies about it and advertises and says, well, you know, this is orange juice, and then if a person goes out and buys it, they get sick and die.
But, you know, many critics would say this is a kind of poison.
Okay, but my answer to that is that's just an incorrect metaphor. No one ever got sick from watching something that was unpleasant, from hearing an obscene word.
Well, the fact of the matter is, maybe they didn't get physically ill, but they...
To talk about this as Jim does in terms of it being a public health issue really does disservice to things that are genuinely public health issues. People are dying of cancer. People are dying of heart disease, of diabetes. Those are public health issues. And yes, to answer the caller, smoking leads to cancer and heart disease. And so that's indeed a very serious issue. And that really is not part of the free speech issue. To say metaphorically that the information is creating a public health problem when the information is about sex or about some political issue is just not correct. And by the way, there's not a scintilla of evidence on this issue of violence, which was raised earlier.
Well,
that violence in the media causes violence in the real world.
Let's turn to our callers once more.
Thousands of studies.
Yeah, Amy's calling from Boston. Hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I guess I must have missed a point earlier about the violence, but I'm a parent of two, and, you know, I think that, you know, I think a lot of this conversation is somewhat misdirected. I mean, I thought that the Super Bowl stunt was kind of stupid, and I just turned it off, but, you know, I think that there's a lot of, I don't know, puritanical whatnot in this country about, you know, a breast, which is just human anatomy, but I am offended by all the violence. I mean, you can't, there's like almost nothing you can watch, especially, you know, the prime time or whatever. I think that that's a bigger reflection on our society about all the violence and killing and gratuitous, you know, whatever.
So you say if there's a roadblock going to be put up against violence. Amy, our time's short, but thank you very much for your call. Jim Starr, how about that? Is that on your screen as well? Are you looking for a moderate, reasonable, bar on violence in the media as well?
Sure. There are enormous public health consequences in terms of violence in media and in terms of sexuality, commercialism, et cetera. They're so well documented in terms of their impact on kids and young people in this society with enormous costs in the tens and tens of billions of dollars, whether it's in obesity, juvenile diabetes, all sorts of other stuff. And in the violence side, obviously, to specific acts of violence as well as gun violence and many other things. So to suggest that there is no – it's improper to suggest that to scapegoat the media and blame media for everything in our society and in fact, to broadly censor political speech or many kinds of speech. But it's clear that media has an enormous and in many cases a damaging effect on various – and the caller's questions about cigarettes was a very good one. So we do need to balance this. That's exactly why the common sense – approach is necessary here. Extreme ideological positions may sound good, but they don't work in reality for the millions of Americans who are out there trying to deal with it. And I actually don't think
10 seconds,
they work
our time
in our
is almost up
context.
Here. Do you think that U.S. media is going to be different in a year?
I think in a small way. I think probably the most important thing is the question of whether or not the consolidation of the media industry, which we talked about earlier and which Jonathan Krim from The Washington Post mentioned, will be rolled back somewhat, because I think that underlies many of the issues we've had such a thoughtful discussion about tonight.
Well, we'll be listening and we'll be watching. Jim Steyer, chairman of Common Sense Media, thanks for joining us tonight. And Paul Evanson, chairman of the Communication and Media Studies Department at Fordham University and author of The Soft Edge, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be here.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.